Remember to request your absentee ballot. For more information, visit IamAVoter.com.
The only frustrating part about it is this, is he shoots 14 free throws, which is as much as our whole team shoots. That's the frustrating part. I mean, I think our guys were working hard on him, and we were doing a pretty good job. He did make some good shots. They were obviously getting him the ball a lot, getting him in space. We could have helped a little bit better here and there, but they take very good care of him tonight.
Woo! We had to break out a special mini edition of BS or Real Talk after Nick Nurse was complaining about Jason Tatum today. Shanae, do you think that is BS or Real Talk about Tatum and the free throws compared to the entire Raptors team?
I think it's a little bit of BS just because we're not taking it too seriously in the sense that Nick Nurse is not the guy that normally complains. And let's be real, Jason Tatum is taking good care of himself by himself in the postseason playing his best basketball. So
this is Real Talk because he's trying to get fined because he's trying to set the tone for game three. And by the way, if I was a coach when Marcus Smart flopped in that late same situation, I might have gotten ejected.
Welcome to The Jump. I'm glad you're not ejected from this show. I'm Rachel Nichols, joined by Indeed, New York Times bestselling author Brian Windhorst, and the former number one pick in the WNBA draft, Chinne Ogumike, who is currently with the LA Sparks, and ESPN Radio. You can find her everywhere and on this show for the next hour. Guys, we are less than 6 hours away from Game 7 between the Thunder and Rockets. We're right here on ESPN. Later in the show, we're going to discuss which star player you would rather have tonight, Chris Paul or James Harden. Put that through your brain for a few minutes. First, though, let's be honest. The first round of the NBA playoffs can sometimes be a little bit rough. You get all excited that the postseason is finally here and then have to sit through 2 weeks of blowouts. It's kind of like waiting for an hour to be seated at a restaurant, only to sit down and find out you've got some sort of sad, limp shrimp cocktail waiting for you. It's bad. It's not good. I'll admit, I was worried that this would be more true than ever this year. I mean, in a normal postseason, we see some teams 1-2-3 Cancuning it once they get down a game, right? This year, when guys have been trapped in a bubble for 2 months, yeah, my hopes were not high. But boy, what a first round it has been. Damian Lillard's Blazers uniform might as well have been a superhero costume. Carmelo Anthony showed us grace. CJ McCollum showed us grit. Dallas' Luka Doncic brought us magic. Philadelphia and Joel Embiid brought the soap opera-level drama, right? And we had Markelle Fultz take another step on his redemption journey while Jimmy Butler got into it with, well, nearly everyone on the court for the Pacers. And oh man, the Thunder and Rockets. Tonight we get a Game 7 where one of the best point guards in the history of the game will try to knock out the team that left him on the discard pile a year ago with two former MVPs on the other side. It could be epic, although those teams will have to put in some work to live up to last night's Jazz-Nuggets Game 7, which itself was a whole thrill ride. Most of that series had been dominated by the team's guards. In fact, Donovan Mitchell and Jamal Murray scored more combined points in that series than any other opposing players in the 74-year history of the NBA playoffs. Crazy. But last night, we also got a reminder of how much the big men could do. Some exceptional play from both Nikola Jokic and Rudy Gobert. By the time the fourth quarter came around, both teams were exhausted, which led to this wild sequence that started with a beautiful turnaround hook by Jokic. It looked like Mitchell would have a chance to even the score on the other end, but instead, Gary Harris strips the ball. And that should have been it. There were less than 10 seconds on the clock. The Nuggets should have just dribbled it out. Instead, Jamal Murray passed the ball to Torrey Craig, who misses the layup. He gives the Jazz one more shot. That fell to Mike Conley. And now before I show you the end of the highlight, well, take a look at this photo. After Conley launches the ball, Donovan Mitchell's arms go up in the air. He is ready to celebrate. Of course, it didn't quite work out that way. Instead, Conley launches. The ball hits the rim twice. And it does not go in. Mitchell couldn't believe it falling to the ground. And then because this is the kind of series it has been, the first one over there to pick him up and console him was Murray. Afterward, Jamal Murray spoke to our Scott Van Pelt.
You guys win and you get to keep going, but what's Coach Malone going to say to you about that situation where you got the lead and the ball? You don't need a bucket, man. Just dribble around.
You know what? I don't want to talk about it. It's over. I won't talk about it. so many bad things happened on that play. Let's just Clippers, man. Clippers in a few days. Let's think about that.
Let's just think about that. With the win, the Nuggets became only the 12th team in NBA history to come back and win a series after being down 3-1. We know about a few of the other ones. Usually a wild ride like that comes in later playoff rounds. But this playoffs, well, forget the appetizers. We got a full plate of steak right from the start. So, Chinee, looking back at the entire series, what was the biggest reason, do you think, for the Jazz blowing what was a 3-1 lead to the Denver Nuggets?
Well, I'd have to say that, you know, it's easy to sort of want to play the blame game because it's a game seven and everyone really cares. But to me, there's no one to blame because we got game seven. And it wasn't just a game seven in which we thought, oh, like these guys are dropping 50 and 40 and it's going to be out of parallel in the score like category. It was 80 to 78. We got old school basketball. You can't blame Donovan Mitchell because obviously I think, you know, if Jamal Murray is the breakout star of the bubble, Donovan Mitchell is the guy who now has cemented his status. Like we all knew he had potential. Now we're seeing that potential be actualized. He still had what, 22 points or so and shot pretty efficiently over the course of the series. Rudy Gobert, what did he have? Like 19 and 18? Like they gave their all. And you saw down the stretch how amazing it was to, you know, the narrative going into this series was what was the relationship like between Donovan and Rudy, and then you see these guys literally have love for each other as they're competing. Gobert's dunk was great. Donovan finishing plays late, even though the last one was sort of out of his hand. I think it was beautiful to see what the narrative was when the pandemic started and where these two teammates are. So I'm not going to put any blame on any one of them, even though, you know, they ended up losing.
Rachel, this is going to be something that haunts the Jazz for the next 4 or 5 months whenever they play again. Look, there's been, I think, 12 teams that have blown 3-1 leads over the course of the last 50 or so years in the NBA, and almost all of them have had to make changes, and that's because it's so traumatic. And I don't think that's necessarily in the cards for the Jazz. But while Chinee is right that there isn't one finger to point, I mean, you know, Donovan Mitchell, as great as he was, had that 8-second violation in game one. If that didn't happen, they might have swept this series. Now, obviously, the turnover last night, but you can't blame him. I think, if anything, they decided to make some changes to this team that reduced their defense and boosted their offense. And the reason they struggled, not last night, but in the three losses leading up to it, was because their defense wasn't good enough. So I think they'll look to improve that. But this is going to be a tough one. They're going to be thinking about this for a long time.
But Brian, isn't the biggest change they can make to get Bogdanović back from injury?
Yeah, for sure. And that's got to be the asterisk on the whole thing, is that they didn't have their full team. And maybe if they did, they would have won. But I'm just telling you, having been around teams that lost 3-1 leads, there's scar tissue that's going to come out of this. We'll definitely see that.
All right. Well, waiting in the wings for the Nuggets is indeed the Clippers, who last played on Saturday. Here's Jamal's reaction to Scott Van Pelt when telling him when the series starts. This was amazing. Take a listen.
Both look gassed, both sides. And the Clippers, we know, is going to be a rugged test. Between now and Thursday, what do you do?
We play Thursday?
Yeah.
You don't get 2 days off?
No. No, it's Thursday.
Man.
Chinee, I don't know if you've been there before. Just that, wait, what? Will the fatigue, do you think, be too much a factor for the Nuggets to overcome in game one?
I mean, that's the problem. Fatigue is sort of out of your control. You literally work to put yourself in a position where you can go and play the Clippers, you know, in a game seven, but then that's closer than you even thought. And it's funny because it takes me back to my days when playing, where you don't focus on the next game until you finish that game in itself. And when the game was finished, you don't even know what your calendar's looking like. You think that naturally, you know, outside of the bubble, you have a couple of days, you're changing cities. No, in the bubble, we're playing in 48 hours, and the Clippers haven't played since Sunday, so they are going to be rested. But one thing I think that can work to the Nuggets' favor is the fact that now Jamal Murray is looked to as an explosive scorer. Like, he will have confidence going in there. So even if they are tired, he will still know how to push through that. Gary Harris, I loved his defense. He's a defender that will take the challenge of going up against Paul George, Kawhi Leonard, and the company. And then also Jokic, I mean, quietly with the, 30 and 14, he was like Old Faithful. Just very rock steady. So even though they may be tired, they did find a perfect combination of players that all were very important in getting them to the position of advancing in the next round.
We see this almost every year where a higher seed team waits and there's sometimes an advantage. The one thing I'll say is if this was a normal year, the Nuggets would be flying to L.A. today. They would have won at home last night in Game 7, and they would have had a 2.5-hour flight. So they don't have to travel. So at least that's on their side. But, Rachel, if you watched this game last night, both of these teams were low on energy. So I would say huge advantage Clippers Game 1. In fact, if you're Doc Rivers, you're showing your team that clip that you just showed from the SVP show to get them going leading into that game.
Yeah, I did a bunch of short shots in the fourth quarter, which is, of course, as we know, a sign of exhaustion. And look, you know, you said the point about they'd be flying. I mean, yes, because they were, quote, the home team. They would have been flying from home because of Game 7. But we've seen teams in, quote, normal years where they're on the road finishing up one series and then fly directly to the next city to start another series. So at least in the bubble, they don't have to do with that either. We'll see, though, what kind of shape they're in when they show up for Game 1 against the Clippers. All right, stick with us, because coming up, we're going to talk a little Marcus Smart. Is he proving to be the difference in the Celtics-Raptors series? Sure was a Game 2 last night. First, though, it's time for another installment of Jump at the Symphony. Here we take one final look back at the final seconds of Jazz Nuggets Game 7. Maestro, please.
They finally get it to Mitchell. 10 on the shot clock. Had it back tapped, he lost it! The Nuggets come up with a defensive play. They missed the layup, Gobert got it! Two seconds to go. The disappointment etched across the face of Mitchell. And the respect from two guys that will be tied together for a long time.
The Jump is brought to you by Heineken. Enjoy Heineken responsibly.
Remember to request your absentee ballot. For more information, visit IamAVoter.com.
Guy, what's up, baby?
What it do, baby?
Make, miss. It's a make or miss league, baby. That's it.
That's it. It just is what it is. Make fundamentals. It's a make or miss league. Inside a minute, Jokic makes good use of his pivot foot, floats up. I love this hook shot. I love it. Brian, do you think he takes his coffee breaks with Kareem? Get it?
This has been dubbed the ground hook. Instead of the sky hook, the ground hook. But hey, if it gets you 2 points, what's it matter, Rachel?
Come on. I thought this was really nice and great defense by Rudy.
They think that this is like a travel sometimes when you do 360 pivots. I like it.
I love this. I could see this in every block of the show. I'm not kidding. I thought this was beautiful. And by the way, it turned out to be the game winner. So, ha, Mr. Ground Hook. All right, miss, cool heads. Rudy Gobert trying to go back up with the offensive rebound. Body got fouled. And watch here, just kind of stomps in anger. He's got the angry toddler thing going because, you know, he also kicks chairs and he makes drinks go this way and all of that. Sinead, when you're out there in the moment, is it just hard not to let it all, the anger just flow?
I think I loved it because in that moment, Rudy Gobert was playing with reckless abandon, and that's just who he is. He might show his emotions and sometimes it gets the best of him, but he was fouled, Rachel. On that play, he was fouled, and he had a right to be big mad, you know, big mad.
Yeah. I mean, this was funny, but real talk, this is sometimes what upsets his teammates is that he pouts when he doesn't get his way. So he could maybe improve on that. But he also got hit in the eye later and didn't get a call either. He had a beef.
Speaking of eyes, make eye contact. Fourth quarter, Jason Tatum looks off Pascal Siakam like a quarterback looking off a safety and then hits the three. I don't know. Do we think Jason could be a quarterback if we switch sports around here? What do you think, Brian?
Uh, He could be a quarterback. He could be a wide receiver. He could be a tight end. He could be a safety, maybe a linebacker, depending on how he tackles. This was a brilliant play and just shows how much respect they have for his teammates who are making shots because they didn't know where to go.
Cosign retweets all of that. He could play any position, probably, you know. But the eye movement, that's super subtle but super effective. And I really had something to say, but I'm going to have to censor myself because it's like, you know, with your eyes, you can do something to a defender or someone in front of you with your eyes. Yeah, like he sort of did that. And it makes you feel naked in that moment when you go for that and like fall for that. So it stinks.
We're going to just leave that there. Miss, patience. Back to Celtics Raptors. Tatum hits the step back, but he is called for a push-off foul. Then he air punches and he gets teed up. There's been a lot of these air punch texts. Chiney, what's the deal here?
Okay, let me break it down. To be fair, all the points of emphasis that you get as a professional basketball player, both the WNBA and the NBA, we share the same refs. We are told this every year. If you punch the air, you will get a technical. So it's 50-50 whether it actually applies. They do call it, sometimes they don't. But yeah, we are told that this will be a technical as a player. We know that this is coming if you do that. But we did see later on that it didn't happen to certain players either. So it's 50-50, always
a
toss-up.
This is a classic example of spirit of the law by the letter of the law. In a four-point game in the last minute of a playoff game, you don't call that. And right. I think most officials would agree with that.
It's not even, I mean, he didn't even, if he was going to punch the air and earn a technical for it, I think he could have done better. I'm just saying. Make drama. Raptors out and running after the turnover. I love this music. Marcus Smart just decides to run into Pascal Siakam, draws the offensive foul. Do you think Smart was a drama kid in high school, Brian?
Okay, this is one of the greatest flops I've ever seen. And if I was Nick Nurse, as I said earlier, I would have gotten ejected. Because he initiates the contact. He has no, the other guy has no idea he's coming. He flops, and he's 6 feet behind the play, and it costs him 2 points. This is a crazy call. I guess tip your cap to Marcus Smart.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes you get those calls, sometimes you don't. But more power to you for, like, leaning all the way in that moment and risking it all there. But, like, what we're seeing
don't
now is
that.
He tends to get the benefit of the doubt. And that's just not one of those times right there.
We've had Marcus on the show to talk about his flapping, among other things. And we're going to sing his praises here in a minute. But he knows what he does. It's all strategery. Miss scouting reports. Kemba Walker hitting a step-back dagger with 4.1 seconds left. Gave the Celtics that three-point lead. Chiney, we've seen Kemba do this time and time again. As a player, how hard is it to defend his step back J?
Look, Coach Tarr at Stanford University Hall of Famer would always say the only thing you can do for moves like that is prayer defense. Just pray that they miss. That's so much in Kemba's bag that you just have to go with the flow and let the gods of Spalding and Wilson just ever reign in your favor.
Yeah, it depends on your defensive system, but it's probably the better percentage play defensively to make him try to take that shot as opposed to go to the rim where he could get fouled or score. Just in that percentage, he's good at it.
It's so nice. Just watching Kemba these last couple games, it's been so nice to watch him with other really major heavy hitter offensive threats on the floor. It's what was missing, all those playoff runs that he had in Charlotte. Not that there were that many, but the ones that he had. And it's just nice to see a little less defensive pressure on him and him able to show all the parts of his game. Wish him so much success. All right, I do want to keep the focus on this series because we promised we were going to talk about how good Marcus Smart is. Marcus Smart is really good. He took control of this game, scoring 16 points, a dazzling three-minute stretch early in the fourth. He made 5 three-pointers, turning the last of those into a four-point play in the Celtics' win. Afterward, Brad Stevens said, Marcus has been a leader since he got here. I've said it many times. We've been in the playoffs every year since he's been here, and that is not a coincidence. Brian, do you think Smart is ultimately going to be the difference in this series?
Well, one of the reasons he's a difference is not just because of his play, but who he's making up for, which is the loss of Gordon Hayward. And the Raptors are one of the best defenses in the league, one of the best defenses in the bubble. Scoring was going to be an issue for the Celtics in this series, especially without Hayward. And Marcus has made up for that. Not only has he been terrific in putting the points on the board, but he has undercut the way the Raptors want to play defense because they don't want to guard him, Rachel. But because he's hitting these threes, it's stretching their defense and giving lanes for other guys. His play has been, without question, the definition of a difference maker so far.
And it's not just Gordon Hayward. It's also when you have a team that is dominated by guard play, and sometimes you don't get as much production from the bigs, even though Robert Williams gives you good productions per minute, which we learned on the broadcast, which is awesome. Daniel Tice is there. I think it's really key for them. He's the type of player that you want to play with. He's the type of player that will make the play that shifts outcomes in moments like this. Like you said, Rachel, 5 threes and 3 minutes late. You know, before we thought it was probably the Raptors that stole the momentum and would run away with it. And you have a player that can sort of not be accounted for on the scouting report, not be accounted for, you know, from the offensive schemes, that can give you that boost. And the boost is not something you can necessarily predict all the time, but it's a boost that will change the outcome for your team, the Celtics. Because now I feel like if they connect on all cylinders, they can make it all the way to the finals.
Ooh. All right. I'm just going to leave that take there for a minute. I would add, by the way, that Marcus Smart is the kind of player that I think all 29 other teams would be thrilled to have on their club. And I would normally say that about Pascal Siakam too, right? But yesterday, Spicy P, not so spicy, struggled to make an impact late, had that turnover where he stepped out of bounds. Chinee, why haven't we seen peak Siakam against the Celtics?
So this is a thing, you know, coming into the bubble after having 4 months or so off, it affects people different ways. We've seen some people be able to step up and play. We've seen some people sort of struggle. And Pascal Siakam, for the most part, is a real rhythm player. He's a flow player. He gets the ball in transition and sort of catches his rhythm. But also, he plays in the flow of his team. And so with the stoppage of play, it affects people very differently. I know his percentages have gone from about, what, like 46% shooting the ball to now like 39%. But it's not just Pascal. You know, I think the Raptors, they could really help by making shots, period. I think he was 1 for 4 from three yesterday. Kyle Lowry was 0 for 7 from three. Van Fleet was 3 for 12 from three. So making shots will take some of the pressure off of Pascal so he can play his game in transition. And just sort of when people don't understand or expect he's going to make a move, that's when Pascal gets his bucket. So the pressure's on everyone, but especially Spicy P.
I don't disregard anything you just said, but I also think it's a difference between being a number one and a number two. And I think he's probably a number two. And when you are now the focus of the other team's defense, the pressure increases. And, you know, this is where they miss Kawhi Leonard. When he was number two, more things were open for him. And I really do think it may be as simple as that.
All right. Well, we'll keep an eye on that as we go. Coming up on this show, we're playing a few rounds of jump ball to preview Game 7 between the Thunder and Rockets right here on ESPN tonight. Stick around to find out who Chinee and Brian are picking to win. We'll discuss.
Remember to request your absentee ballot. For more information, visit IamAVoter.com.
Indeed Vote. Coming up later on ESPN, Deportes and the app, Heat Bucks. Game 2 at 6:30 Eastern, and then it's Game 7 between James Harden and the Rockets, Chris Paul and the Thunder. Our coverage tips with NBA Countdown, 6 o'clock Eastern, and here's a little recap of how we got to Game 7 between Oklahoma City and the Houston Rockets.
Oklahoma City survives for a Game 7. The story continues for the Thunder. And what was thought might be a rebuild year, no sir.
It's a tough loss for us. We bounce back.
We have had a memorable season, a lot of ups and downs and all that. We're just going to continue to fight. We wouldn't have it any other way.
We just gave ourselves a chance. Game 7, anything can happen.
Chris Paul put the Thunder on his back here tonight.
When it gets to clutch time, some people built for it. Some people shy away from it.
Game 7 is coming up. Should be a good one.
Welcome back. We are fired up for this Game 7 tonight. And I want to play a few rounds of jump ball to prepare for it. First up, Chinee, you heard Chris Paul. Some people are just built for fourth quarters there. Who would you rather have in tonight's Game 7, CP3 or Harden?
You know, I'm always the one that's always taking the jump ball, so I love this. I would want Harden just because I would not be able to land back in Bush Intercontinental Airport if I said otherwise. I'm not doubting CP3. We all know Chris Paul is a leader, but James Harden, if he can play his brand of basketball and really take the next step of hearing the narrative, hearing the noise, and delivering to me, that's why I'd take Harden, because I think we all saw what happened with Game 6, and he won't want that to happen again.
I think they actually fly the hobby, though, Chinee. But I got to tell you,
James
Harden's history, that's true. James Harden history in Game 7's not good. And so the pressure is on him. Now, I will say this. I think it's more likely for James Harden to put up 40 points in the first three quarters, build a lead, and not have to worry about crunch time. So I'm going to say James Harden. But if it gets to crunch time, Chris Paul is going to have the mental edge in this big, big game for James Harden tonight.
I love how even in those little like little pictures they've got, those little boxes there, Chris is doing that little snarl. That's Chris Paul in the fourth quarter. Next up, which team do you think has the most trustworthy supporting cast, the Thunder or the Rockets? And Brian, this means basically anyone not named James Harden, Chris Paul, Russell Westbrook.
Well, I mean, yes. I mean, Houston, in theory, Houston should have the better supporting cast. If you look at how Robert Covington and P.J. Tucker and Eric Gordon fit and are paid, they should have the better supporting cast. So I'll go with them, but I don't know if I would bet with them.
You see, the thing is, Rachel, I thought supporting cast was just taking the top two players like Chris Paul and James Harden. Russell Westbrook has to accept the role of supporting cast because clearly in game six, it didn't work out when he had the ball in his favor down the stretch. So now you have to, if there is a crunch time moment, I would want James Harden. He's going to be a part of that supporting cast. As Brian said, it's not just, you know, Russell Westbrook, though. It's Jeff Green. It's Eric Gordon. Guys that have a higher ceiling if they play well. If Eric Gordon plays well and can knock down baskets, at least in this game, I know it's been a struggle for him consistently. These guys are top-tier players for their team and for what they need them to do. Jeff Green, we've been talking about him early in the series. Like, as much as the supporting cast for OKC has made a name for themselves, the ceiling when it comes to the Rockets making shots is just different. It blows the top off. And so, of course, I got to stand by my 290 crew.
There you go.
That's the highway.
I'm going to go out on, I guess this is a statistical limb. I think you will see more from James Harden in that fourth quarter today. I do agree with you, Chinee. I think he's heard the noise.
Okay.
So you won't have Russell Westbrook taking those shots at the end. I think we will have Harden taking them. We'll have to see what happens, though, which leads to this question, which is, next up, Brian, who is under more pressure tonight? Rockets general manager Daryl Morey or Rockets coach Mike D'Antoni? Both of their seats have gotten a little warm.
I think it's the whole Rockets organization, to be honest with you, but probably Daryl, because he wasn't able to extend D'Antoni before this season started, so D'Antoni is sort of an extension of that situation. Plus, this is the gamble that he took putting this team together. He's made a lot of moves with this roster, and this needs to work. And obviously, not just the midseason trade, but the Westbrook trade, which Harden was a part of. So everybody wearing red and white tonight is feeling that warmth under their seat.
And I'd have to agree, just because Coach D'Antoni came in, you know, 2016, Daryl Morey was there about 10 years prior. And you mentioned, you know, the iterations of the Rockets. I go back to having hope when Dwight Howard was on the squad, when Montrezl Harrell was on the squad, when Patrick Beverley was on the squad. And so, yeah, all these different iterations, and I think it's funny Max Kellerman said it, it's not small ball, it's micro ball. Mm-hmm. Like, they've leaned all the way they could into this, and now we've seen all different versions of it. And now it's like, where are the results of all these experiments? So I think the pressure is on the GM just in this instance, because where do we go with the talent, a once-a-generational talent, an offensive talent in James Harden? What do we have to show for it? We've seen a lot of different switches, but what has worked? What tangible evidence do we have, like a championship or something?
I mean, look, let's be honest. The pressure has been on Daryl Morey since the whole China situation and what went on with the owner and what he tweeted afterward and all of this back and forth. I don't know if Daryl Morey should be held accountable for the Westbrook CP trade, since all the reporting has been that that request came from James Harden and an organizational support, not only at the roster level from Harden, but at the ownership level as well. And so Daryl just went out and did it. But we also know that's not how big boy basketball works, that sometimes, even if it wasn't your idea, you are held responsible for the result, which all comes down to tonight. So finally, who you got? Who wins game seven, Chinee? Oklahoma City or Houston?
Let's go. This is our moment of hope, Houston. All right, game seven, pressure's on. I don't know if we win the full championship, but at least can we say we have hope in this series? I'm picking Houston because two of the last four MVPs are on the same team. We've got Russell Westbrook and James Harden. We should be able to win a game seven in the first round.
I don't make predictions, but I predict that Scott Foster is the big winner tonight, because somebody is going to not having to blame him anymore, because the Rockets have lost their last seven playoff games with Scott Foster officiating it. They have essentially blamed their Game 7 loss to the Warriors a few years ago on him, even though they missed 27 straight threes. They prepared a whole report blaming
him. A dossier.
And guess what? Scott Foster... a dossier. That's right. I so apologize, Rachel. Chris Paul has lost 9 consecutive games in the playoffs with Scott Foster, dating back to his Clipper days. So not everybody can blame Scott Foster. Scott Foster will get a victory for somebody tonight.
No, at least I have an excuse. I'm happy. We don't like curses in Houston. You saw what the little B curse was back in Houston. So
that's
yeah.
Right. That's right.
It's one of the great refereeing assignments in NBA history tonight. I can compliment the league.
Absolutely. 100%. All right, guys, coming up, we're going to talk a little bit more Clippers. Are they turning into the villains of the bubble? Dame Lillard and Luka Doncic may think so. Stick around to hear what Janae and Brian think. You are watching The Jump.
Remember to request your absentee ballot. For more information, visit IamAVoter.com.
Welcome back to The Jump. Marcus Morris has been fined a hefty 35 large, what the league called, quote, recklessly striking Luka Doncic above the shoulders. That was, of course, in Game 6 of the Clippers-Mavericks series. Brian, we've also seen the Clippers get into it with Damian Lillard in the bubble. Are they kind of becoming the villains of Orlando? And maybe that's not such a bad thing.
Well, first, let me say that we have to remember the Draymond Green rule, which is flagrant foul points. So now Marcus Morris has 2 and 1 more flagrant 2 or 2 more flagrant 1s suspension. So keep an eye on that because we just got through the first round.
Yep.
You know, look, Patrick Beverley and Marcus Morris have a reputation. I don't know if it's fair to say it's the Clippers' reputation because I don't think the Kawhi has that. I don't think that Doc Rivers has that. But you know, you are who you hang around with, and Paul George got roped in to that Damian Lillard kerfluffle. And so, like it or not, even though I don't think it's a badge the Clippers necessarily want to tote around, they're going in that direction, and it doesn't help when you start to rack up flagrant fouls.
Man, I'm sorry. I lost all that once you said kerfluffle.
I know.
I love that word.
a fracas.
But what is interesting about this is maybe – you know, individually, Marcus Morris Sr. and Patrick Beverley can be looked to as villains, but you don't really cast people as villains until they actually beat the heroes, right? Like, you become villains after you win, or else you won't be taken seriously. So I think the Clippers, they're a team that has never been to the NBA Finals. They have not even been to the Conference Finals. So until they actually do that, I will not cast them as villains because they still need to prove that they can be their own heroes. They can save themselves. But yeah, this is a part of the petty, right? And sometimes I think when you're a team that sort of has struggled more than people thought, especially with the Mavs series, you're a team that sort of needs to build your own energy, especially in a bubble environment where there are no fans, there's nobody booing. So you boo, and we're literally seeing people boo from the, you know, from the sides. And it is bringing energy and it is bringing distraction. But I wonder where the good outweighs the bad for the team when it comes to their success.
And also the lens we view this with shifts from year to year, right? So when the Clippers and some of these same players that we're talking about, not all of them, but a few of them, were the scrappy underdog team that was just edging into the playoffs and then really gave so much trouble to the Golden State Warriors in that first round series. It was with some of these tactics, Patrick Beverley, what he was doing to Kevin Durant and all of that. And everyone thought it was scrappy and somewhat charming. And then now that they have the big boys on the block, they're a little bit, you know, one of the two bullies of the Western Conference. When they're doing it to teams like Portland or to Dallas, it's not viewed through the same lens. I would say, however, that teams historically who have a little bit of that spice and junkyard dog in them, they do okay. I mean, talk about the Pistons, right? The Bad Boys and what they represented. In the moment, there were a lot of other players and teams that could have given you chapter and verse about why they were bad for basketball. But how do we remember them, right? Janae, when you think about the Bad Boys, you think of them fondly, right?
No, not at all, because Coach Lambeer is coaching for the Vegas Aces, and every time we play against the Vegas Aces, they always try to come at your girl. It's always a physical match. And so, yeah, that's one thing you can't shake off. I learned that by watching The Last Dance. I'm like, dang, Bill. First of all, everyone was joking that he was actually running the floors,
yep,
because apparently that's different than what they see with Bill now. But, yeah, you spoke right into my weaknesses here, because going up against the Vegas Aces,
all right.
But yeah, maybe this is the identity, though, that the Clippers want to have. You know, they want to be the Bad Boys. They want to be able to play hard and bring their own energy.
Yeah, you know, when they traded for Marcus Morris, they knew this came along with it, and they signed Patrick Beverley. They it wasn't like these guys, they didn't know who they were, and they are who they are. So this is what they want.
Absolutely, and I think they're going to ride with him the rest of the way. All right, you said, Brian, you are who you hang around with. Here's who Chinee and I hang around with, a very talented writer, because this is what The Jump recommends for today. Indeed, our Brian Windhorst has penned an excellent piece on the ESPN app. It's on Jimmy Butler's perfect fit with the Heat. There's a great anecdote at the top about Jimmy actually failing a conditioning test and then being up at 4 in the morning, working out the next day, the rest of the team joining him. This is all ahead of Bucks Heat Game 2 tonight on ESPN. We are going to dig deeper into this piece, talk a little Jimmy Butler on the other side of the break. Everyone stay with us. This matchup is spicy.
Remember to request your absentee ballot. For more information, visit IamAVoter.com.
The Jump is brought to you by Heineken. Enjoy Heineken responsibly.
Harden matched up with Chris Paul.
Wow!
The Rockets take a 2-0 lead.
As crazy as it sounds, we can be way better.
I gotta be better. It's that simple.
Chris Paul put the Thunder on his back.
Clutch time, fourth quarter. Some people built for it.
What a big shot!
A lot of guys on our team been pushed out, traded, or whatnot, but we just stick together and we keep fighting.
Oklahoma City survives for a Game 7. Big time, Chris Paul.
Oh, that's going to be so good. And so's this. Our next WNBA matchups are Tuesday, September 8th, ESPN 2. Lynx and Mystics square off at 8 Eastern, 7 Central. And then it's the Fever and Aces. Both games will also be streaming live on the ESPN app. All right, guys, it's crunch time here on The Jump. I'm back with Chinee Agumike and Brian Windhorst. It was announced today that Charles Oakley is on the new season of Dancing with the Stars. This is amazing. We've seen other NBA greats do this, Kareem, Clyde Drexler, but Chinee, are you interested to see what kind of moves Oak has in the ballroom?
Yo, I love this, and particularly I love this for producer Steve, who's a Knicks fan, because if you're a Knicks fan and you need some love, this is your chance to really challenge yourself to win a championship, but in a different arena, so this is great for Oak. And I also heard that Carole Baskins is in there, so it's going to be really interesting to see what wins.
I'm not saying anything bad about Charles Oakley doing anything.
Producer Steve, Chinee would like you to know that he has given up being a Knicks fan forever, but we'll talk about that more later. Let's talk about Brandon Ingram, named the NBA's most improved player this week. This is his fourth season. Ingram averaging almost 24 points per game, received 42 first place votes. Bam Adebayo was a very close second, 38 first place votes. Brian, you're a voter. Who did you vote for and how hard was the decision?
Yeah, I voted for Brandon Ingram, and I know that there are several people who are upset with the way this vote went. I, like a lot of voters, don't really consider first or second year players in this because it's natural for them to improve. I know that's a controversial opinion, but I thought Brandon Ingram earned this award, and he's going to earn a max contract when the offseason comes.
What about you, Chinee? Who would you have voted for?
I love this for B.I. I love this for B.I. just because he went from 18 to 24 points per game. He almost had the Pelicans in the playoffs without Zion for a large portion of the stretch. So he was a go-to guy. He took the next step. I'm happy for B.I.
I saw someone on Twitter say that they should rename this award the High Draft Pick Meets Expectations Award. I'm not sure I would go that far, but I personally voted for Luka Doncic. I don't think this has to be a young player coming into more form. I think the leap that he made from Rookie of the Year to being firmly in the MVP conversation is something we haven't seen in a long time. All right, it's time to talk about the Godfather, Pat Riley, celebrating 25 years with the Heat yesterday. Miami has won all three of their titles during Riles' time there. It's incredible when you consider he already had five championships, four as a coach, one as a player, before even getting to Miami. Brian, I cannot imagine the Miami Heat without Pat Riley. Can you?
Yeah, they look like the New York Knicks for the last 25 years, probably, because this was one of the greatest trades in the history of the NBA. First round draft pick, $1 million, one of the great deals of all time.
Oh, I love this movie, The Godfather. I love this fact more so that he was the first North American sports figure to have, a championship as a player, assistant coach, head coach, and an executive. So he's really just set the standard in all regards when it comes to sports.
All right, we're going to continue talking about Heat culture here because I want to focus on Jimmy Butler. Brian, I love the piece you wrote on Butler's fit with the Heat organization. We recommended that in the last block. What makes Butler and Miami such a perfect match? That story that you told about in your piece about the beginning of his time there in the conditioning test, it's just amazing.
I don't think Pat Riley has ever been more in love with a player this fast than he has with Jimmy Butler, at least in Miami. Obviously, he's got some guys over the years like Tim Hardaway, Alonzo Mourning, Dwayne Wade, Udonis Haslem, but they have never fallen so hard as they have for Jimmy Butler because he embodies what they want in a Heat player. Other organizations see Jimmy Butler as bringing baggage to certain situations because of how he is. The Heat see that as an asset. They love everything about him. They send song lyrics to each other back and forth, Rachel, Pat Riley and Jimmy Butler, almost like they're writing love poems to each other. I'm telling you.
You know what I love about this? When you think about Heat, you think about, you know, fire and smoke. And you sort of want a player that sort of wants the smoke, wants all the Heat.
Oh, all
and
of
that's
it.
Jimmy Butler.
All of it.
And when you think about the franchise as well, a lot of people say franchise players have to look like a LeBron James, a Zion, a Giannis Antetokounmpo, but not necessarily. Franchise players can also embody the mentality of a franchise so that it can galvanize its players to play better. And that's a Bam Adebayo sort of taking on that sort of mantle as well. You've got young players in Duncan Robinson, Tyler Hero that want the smoke from the three-point line. So it's cool that Jimmy Butler is the guy that brings all of those guys together, and he embodies exactly what Pat Riley wants.
Yeah, and Chiney, we saw Joel Embiid tweeting about Jimmy during the fourth quarter of game one. There's certainly been buzz about Jimmy trying to recruit Joel to ask for a trade to Miami. How do you think other players around the league feel about wanting to play with Jimmy Butler right now? Because there was a time where the idea was, oh, he's a little bit of contention. He's giving a hard time to Karl Anthony Towns or Andrew Wiggins. How do you think other players see him now as a potential teammate?
I've been saying this consistently. The man's from Tomball, Texas. I was born at Tomball Hospital. And in Texas, sometimes our personalities, everything's bigger and better in Texas. Our personalities sometimes are too hot to handle, speaking of the Heat, right? So Jimmy Butler, I'm glad that he's sort of found a home. And I love that Joel Embiid is back to social media as well, because that's what we missed about him, him putting those narratives out there, because I feel like it brings the best in him too, even though it's like you're watching your ex go flourish with someone else. It sort of hurts though.
Jimmy is not for everybody. Playing with Jimmy is not for everybody. Playing in Miami is not for everybody, but it's for a lot of people. And watch out for the Heat and free agency, especially in 2021. Jimmy's still going to have a lot in the tank.
Absolutely. By the way, their exes, Joel and Jimmy, not because they broke up with each other. Someone else broke them up. So we'll have to keep an eye on that. Wendy, Chiney, thank you so much. Go listen to Chiney on the radio. NFL Live is next.